I think we have a role in a greater purpose. But humans' arrogance makes it hard to see. Humans see themselves as the sinner, the destructive ones, but also the reformed ones, see it that way. We see humans needing to go from doing bad things to doing good things. Until we learn to listen and not put ourselves into the driver's seat, we are going to keep misunderstanding our role, and all of life suffers.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we want to welcome this month's sponsor. No wait, time for a change. Time for up-leveling our show and partners to an acceleration of the regenerative paradigm. So we're opening up our sponsorship to those who relate to our work and worldview, and they also want to associate their name with us and vice versa. In the end, we want for these folks to value the idea of sponsoring disruptive and thought-provoking dialogues. Maybe they could use our podcast content in their organizations and associations to uplift thinking. So we're opening our sponsorship to new and additional sponsors starting in June. If you can't get enough of Zach and Carol and the contrarian view of Business Second Opinion, ask for a prospectus and a proposal. Also, we're about to launch the Regenerative Media Company, and we'll be adding a TV channel called Regenerative Life Hacks on YouTube, where we'll be having conversations that are both quirky and compelling. Real stories and experiences that wake up people, their organizations, and communities to the regenerative paradigm. Email Carol at carolsanford.com for more info on sponsorship and shows. We are excited about the idea of you joining our new media company. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach. You know, I've been making people mad recently among our membership community. Mad's probably too big a statement, maybe more like a little confused. Our audience, as you know, and our members are all well-intended to make a difference folks. That's why they show up with us. And most of them really strongly identify with being purpose-driven, mission-driven, vision-driven, you know, as an organization as a whole and as individual humans. But I've been repeatedly saying that such identities are divergent. It doesn't quite hit the nail on the head to think about it that way, nor does it advance significantly the kind of change that you and I and all of our listeners envision when labeling themselves that way, or even more designing their business around it. They use the ideas, purpose-driven, et cetera, as a core concept or a strategy to kind of attract and guide people.
So, are you telling me you've been getting people riled up? Say it so. But I can see how people can get defensive about this topic. Folks can get their entire identity wrapped around really high-level intentions, which are pointed to by these monikers or even mantras that they create. For them, it indicates who their community is. So are you going to say more about this admonition that you're offering?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, this conversation came up most recently last week with the governing body's community, where two members, as I'd been talking about this, almost simultaneously said in the reflection, you need to do a podcast on this because it's so hard to explain to other people what you're talking about. It's really hard to see the error in doing so good, and especially when you've been blind to it before.
Great. Okay, so let's dive in. We hinted at this before, but never really said as much as kind of why. So this is going to really be the point of today. So we're first, as always, going to take an HBR article. So this one's called Creating a Purpose-Driven Organization by Robert E. Quinn and Anyan V. Thakur, I think I'm pronouncing that right, hopefully. Apologies if I didn't. From the July-August 2018 issue. And I thought as I read it that if I were associated with many of the kind of ecological and social activists and thinkers, it would really be like preaching to the choir in a lot of ways. But now I've kind of trained myself to read others' offerings about discriminating judgment and having discriminating judgment rather than, you know, just kind of affirming or debating with my own ideas.
I think we can do something that helps with that. I usually call it an ordering framework. That means that all things are not created equal. There are different levels of power and influence. And it helps us to be able to see things at different worldviews. So let's try three today. I've used some of this before, but it's a discernment framework where we can look at an authority worldview where you get authorities, experts, and sometimes authoritarians, or you can get a humanist worldview, you know, the world where we want to make everything better, or a living systems view. Although this time, I really want to bring a very different window on it, which is an indigenous view.
So by worldview, we mean a connected set of ideas, usually held unconsciously, about how humans, our world, and the universe work, and what that means for how we should think and live.
Yes, that's a pretty good definition of it. You know, it occurs to me, it'd probably be helpful if you could do a quick summary of the article we're giving a second opinion on.
Yeah, okay, great. So the article's byline kind of really says it all. So it says, how to get employees to bring their smarts and energy to work. So if you've listened to the past few of our episodes, you'll know exactly where I'm going with this. But just for background, let me make sure I lay out everything in the article here. So first of all, the byline itself is obviously implying that there's a problem, that employees don't do this automatically, and so we need to fix it, right? So the authors propose the following fixing process as a way to get people invested and motivated at work, and essentially have them discover a sense of purpose. And so the authors outline this kind of 8-step process that looks like the following. Envision an inspired workforce. Discover the purpose. Recognize the need for authenticity. Turn the authentic message into a constant message. Stimulate individual learning. Turn mid-level managers into purpose-driven thinkers and leaders. Connect the people to the purpose. And unleash the positive energizers. Also, Carol, before you jump in, the one thing I'm noticing is this is totally written from the perspective of trying to tell a leader what to do, which also kind of like belies exactly the paradigm it's written from.
Right. No, it's really true. And we did comment on, well, these are all well-intended people. They want to do something they think will make a difference, and they can't see the worldview they're doing it from. So let's offer a foundation on, let's get started with the authority and humanist worldview. Why don't you start with what authority means, and then I'll jump in a little bit more on the humanist worldview.
Cool. Okay, great. So the authority worldview comes to us from a much older time, right? Think kings and queens, where all authority was sourced from the man on top, and whatever he says goes. That man is also the source of all wisdom, decisions, you name it. We still see it reflected today in many of our institutions, but before I jump too far ahead, Carol, go ahead and do you want to talk about the humanists?
Sure. Most of our audience and community members, including you, including me, were all well steeped in this humanist worldview before we joined together in what we do now. And that view is infused with the idea of there people can be better. We can have better humans, and we can do good for others, and we can even increasingly include non-humans and maybe have a mission and a purpose about caring on Earth. Zach, where were you educated, and how did you work in this way, and what did that kind of education mean for you?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big part of my life when I was in business school, actually. The Bainbridge Graduate Institute, or BGI, which is now called Presidio, was a school founded on principles of sustainability, which also was born out of the humanist movement. So for me, it meant that I needed to put people, planet, and profit on the same footing to ensure that I was accounting for the benefits and impacts to all of them simultaneously.
Right. And it was your job to step in and start to do that work. And that's once you got a degree, that'd be your new job.
Right.
There's very interesting guy I've tracked for years, George Lakoff. He's a linguist or a professor of linguistics at UC Berkeley, and he's constantly using these two worldviews, what he uses to help us differentiate and discern. He mostly uses parenting as examples. And we do that. So I'm going to use a little bit of that and talk about the difference between an authority view and a humanist view around family roles. He states that the main belief which underlies the authoritarian is the strict father model. And the belief that the world is really dangerous for the kids, for the wife or partner, somehow you have to really take care of and protect. And children also have to be disciplined. They have to learn to grow up, to adhere to usually a certain set of beliefs, and that the way you get them to have this internal discipline is you engage them in external discipline, whereby they have to do things they don't want to do, but they're necessary to become strong or self-reliant, even competitive, independent, all highly regarded ideas in this worldview, and sometimes across that boundary. So that, how does this fit with your idea or experience of the authority worldview?
I mean, it definitely lands. I grew up in a household with a stern father and a nurturing mother. Although I'm not sure the strictness worked on me, I still can't stand doing things I don't want to do. Although that actually doesn't sound like the worldview played out as intended.
Yeah, but you understand the attempt. So we have just given quite a quick summary of pretty complex ideas. And one can see immediately all the assumptions about the world, what it would do to see the world as dangerous. And as humans, by the way, part of this are naturally bad. And we have a long history of this in Western thought, and mostly in theological settings. And the belief that people have fallenness in their nature and the doctrine of sin, it would contend that you need strict methods of child rearing to actually have children grow up and know how to be in the world. And that's how they get shaped.
I also think that the authority worldview promotes experiences that split children off from really a wider spectrum of experience, right? From embodied experiences to the world in which they live in, not to mention how the child itself kind of relates to itself and then to other people and to nature in a controlling and dominating way rather than in a reciprocal and relational way.
And so then Lakoff goes on to the more humanist view. He calls it a progressive view, where the assumptions about the world in the nurturing parenting model are more benign. But in my view, they're still very Western if you compare them to Asian or indigenous thought, which I said I wanted to do here today, and how they get introduced into our discussion. So Lakoff again talks about nurturing parenting, assumes that the world should and can be better. People come in as they're born, children are good, and we're just going to make them better. And their parents are responsible to nurture their children and turn them into nurturers, people who can both empathize with and act responsibly now and toward themselves, from themselves, and toward others. So I think persons with this more relational ego structure, you know, we help others, would be available for dialogue and negotiation, which you could see in your mother, rather than relying on repression and domination. Zach, again, I love to hear how your own upbringing fits with this, and maybe even been into modern times, your own current parenting intentions.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely fits with my mom's approach. I would also say that I've seen this reflected also more in female teachers growing up than in my male teachers, who were mostly, you know, leaned heavily into the authority role. And this was helpful to me to be able, as you say, to understand how to relate more to people. And so, you know, I gravitated towards that as a younger person while never really understanding nor welcoming the authority approach. But the thing I will say is that while I think I lean heavily into the kind of more humanist role as a parent, I probably adopted more of my father's kind of unconsciously authority role, and neither of which is really working out all that great for me, I would say, in the end.
Yeah. It's a daily learning experience. My kids are fully grown to have grandkids. I have the mix, too, and you have to watch it. So the nurturing parent model is really a more benign form of the Western worldview than the strict father is. However, it's still Western. And I want to talk about the belief that the world can and should be made better by humans is the idea. I just got through critiquing a paper that someone wrote about what they'd said when they interviewed me, and I'm going to stop letting people write what they think I said, because what happens is that people can't see the assumptions that you're using are built in, and it, particularly the underlying assumptions of Eastern thought and of indigenous thought about the world, is that it is not something humans need to clean up and fix or fix other humans, but they believe the world already has an organic, harmonious, and self-balancing if we're not throwing it out of kilter. And you have a role that is not a human role, which is not about shaping anything, other people, the planet, even in a benign and nurturing way, but to align ourselves within it, to see in a nested way that we have a distinctive and additive role. We don't have a purpose. Thus, modern humans who are concerned about the environment and who are beginning to identify with Native Americans or First Nations, as they say in Canada, thought they have to really be cautious because they really don't understand indigenous thought. They're filtering it through all the words they hear coming from native teachers. They're filtering through this nurturing model of reality. And they think it means the same thing. Humans are responsible for making things better. The actual difference between Native thought and Western thought is incredibly deep and wide, and it's akin to the differences from Eastern to Western. And the big thing, I think, is that we have to silence our Western ego, because we have, as this article I was just critiquing did, she kept saying, you got to take action, you got to go find out the practices, do the work to do less harm, to do good. And all that is a very Western progressive worldview.
Which brings us back to purpose-driven, mission-driven, and vision-driven in this article, right? So I can see in the article how both are being pulled on, right? It's both a mix of authority and nurturing here at the same time, depending on kind of the approach and the step that you're in. Its authority aspects play out here in the leader being the source of the purpose and needed to get people to adhere to it. While the humanist aspect here recognizes the need for individuals to find the purpose in their own way, so they use trainings to facilitate stuff like that.
Yeah. I had a really fantastic experience a few years ago. I was meeting with Alumi, which is a native First Nations that at this point where I was in the Caloochan region of Vancouver in British Columbia, right? I was working with the deputy ministers in the province, and a question arose because these folks, and I, by the way, I was doing economic development with them. They wanted to know what a regenerative paradigm looks like. And so all this stuff kind of became relevant. And we actually have a video of the first or maybe it was the last presentation that I did, and I have it on my Vimeo channel, so we'll list it in the show notes so that you can go find it. But the point, back to the point, the deputy ministers were, when I got there, all very enamored of writing purposes and missions and visions, and they'd been doing that a lot for the years before, and of course I walked in and said, no, don't do that. So while I was meeting with this wonderful Lummi elder who we shared a birthday, it was really fun to talk about. I was talking what he thought about it, and I asked him, what do you think about these folks who want missions and purpose? And I said, by the way, do you as tribes ever have mission or purpose or vision? It was very strange. He was so quiet for such a long time. You know, I began to feel like, did he hear me? Is he hard of hearing? Or is he politely pointing out I'm not making sense? Then he began to speak and he told me a story. And I'm not going to tell you the story here, but it was about the birth of humans into a land from beyond time. It was so moving to hear the softness with which he spoke and the way he placed humans in that story. But he ended by saying, I think we have a role in a greater purpose. But humans' arrogance makes it hard to see. Humans see themselves as the sinner, the destructive ones, but also the reformed ones. See it that way. We see humans needing to go from doing bad things to doing good things. Until we learn to listen and not put ourselves into the driver's seat, we are going to keep misunderstanding our role, and all of life suffers. Whew. What's your experience of hearing that story, Zach? How does that show up in your life or your business or community?
Yeah, as you were talking, I noticed the language the elder used, right? We have a role in a greater purpose. And so once again, the purpose isn't ours. We don't own it, as the article would want you to believe. We can only seek to contribute to it, and it's up to us to figure out how to do that in a good way.
Yeah, and to actually listen to what we're being called to, because it's risky, even as you said, to figure out how to do it in a good way. We can have the ego get back in there. Mm-hmm. But our language is helpful, I think. No, our language is not helpful. But being able to hear and read language can help us learn how to look. In alphabetic languages, we have verb, noun, object, right? So subject, verb, object. We do something to something. If you hear the word always at the beginning of we or I, followed by an active verb, do this, make that, change that, and in other words, some kind of doing, and then there's an object of what we're acting on, we know that we're in a humanistic view. We are in the whole image that it's our job as humans to do the heroic work. So we have to stop doing, get that verb. It has to become indirect, not direct. And the way we say it at first is either we do less of this or do more of that. We do less bad and more good, almost like you said at the end. But in order to really shift, you have to learn to hear your language and see that it's usually framed around a problem we've defined. We call that the billiard pocket, right? And it'll be the pocket is a different way we're with people, different way we are with a place. And we as humanists then try and transfer all of our well-intended ideas for a better world and people and think that's our job to do. But language can give you a discerning clue.
And we humans really get committed to our missions and purposes, don't we? Which are, as we pointed out before, from fragmented ideas we generate from a fragmented mind. And so as a contrast, the indigenous mind seeks to hear and understand. So in our school, we use the 7 first principles as an instrument for listening. But you have to use an indigenous regenerative thinking systemic mind in order to do so, or it's really hard to understand. So instead, we get caught up wanting to know what I, as a self-identified good person, am going to do to show my commitment instead.
Yeah. In fact, we love to speak of our good deeds and the consequences, or one of our favorite words is impacts, right? Impact investing. What are the results? And we want to talk about did we do it and did we get what we were going after? It's very hard for us to get into the idea of what is the system pursuing, which we're embedded in and have a role and a contribution based on looking at its purpose, not us having a purpose. We try and seek new behaviors from people and systems and work to bring those about through philanthropy and feedback and behavior modification, missions, purpose, children, employees, on and on. We are so determined that we have to have an impact and then speak to that and tell people how good we are. This all seems increasing, and maybe it's just that I'm getting older. The minute people start talking, I can see which worldview they're in. Does it seem evident to you as you read this article and in your life? And give some examples of how you come to be able to see it.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, there's an example I can think of before we get back to the article is I'm sure as many people know about the statistics around North American trees, right? So this is pretty stark statistics. So there are more trees now in the U.S. than there were 100 years ago, right? So who's going to be able to argue with that? Again, kind of this like data-driven, we set an intention, we did the thing, we're doing the thing kind of worldview. This is in large part due to conservation efforts and replanting efforts of companies like Weyerhaeuser, And so I've gotten into fights with people about this before where, you know, I didn't actually know this. And so people who are, you know, more authority driven are telling me, no, there's more trees, so we're good. Right. So sustainability works, right? We're fine now. Mm-hmm. Well, this doesn't take into account the devastation of old growth forests and the second and third order effects of that. And as you say, Carol, we set out to plant more trees, but what do these ecosystems need to thrive and how best might we contribute to their ongoing growth and evolution instead?
You really can see the worldview that what the human is meaning to do well and then advocating for and trying to prove we did. But we, you mentioned we should get back to the article. We have writers who are promoting, as you pointed out, a little mix of views. I think they're coming mostly from a humanist, but you know they all had a father like yours and mine, so they got a little authority. We're experts. I think it would be good if we switch to pointing to our thoughts relative to what the article writer said. Because remember, we give second opinions, not first opinions. Everything we just did was to create a way to have a conversation. So we need to know more about how what we're thinking really affects and fits with what they were saying. So Zach, let's do more of this application on how the ideas you and I have been talking about, we used in critiquing the article. In fact, we chose these three worldviews by looking at it and seeing them. So let me give you a tee you up here for something. The author suggested a first and second, remember they had eight, had a first and second idea. And the first one was, hey, all you leaders, envision an inspired workforce. Believe it's possible. Put that in your mind. And when that happens, be able to then discover a purpose, which would be fulfilling for them and motivating and create productivity. So how does the humanist nurturing parent fit here? Or maybe even a little of something else in versus where do you think they're blindly charging ahead in the story?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think rather than forcing people to think in a certain way, the authors instead are encouraging and supporting people to see something they might not otherwise. So there's a nurturing aspect here for sure. However, it's not an indigenous way of thinking. It's still focused exclusively on humans and really only, if you look at this article, inside the organization and directly at a leader. And it drops out the level of systemic thinking required to contribute to a whole.
Right. So all the work is for humans to do to make things better, mostly for humans. Let's take the third and fourth idea that they had, which again sound very exciting. You know, you can't argue with them, but you need them in context. So the third one was be authentic and help people be able to get to authenticity or the purpose be, but also transfer, that into a constant message around that authenticity. You know, speak to this, would you, Zach, as a worldview and how language helps give them away.
Mm-hmm. So this one's slightly more tricky. I mean, I think it's on its face, it's still humanist worldview, but it's actually about authority here. Because really, it goes back to the idea of role modeling as a leader, which is about following authority rather than discovering a new way to listen for what's being called for.
Yeah. And so again, it's humans either in this case to other humans helping them be better. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we have stimulate individual learning and then have the leaders, as you said, step forward and be purpose-driven leaders as an example. So in some ways, I feel like they're actually starting in this article from the wrong place and it gets us to kind of a funny place. So it all sounds good, as we said. It makes most well-intended people, one of my new favorite terms, it makes them ecstatic. So why should they not be jumping for joy?
Yeah, again on their face, it seems great. But once you dig into the details of what the authors mean here is where, you know, we start to run into some trouble. I think, once again, looking at the language around stimulating individual learning, what they actually mean is what they say in the next sentence, which is learning and development are powerful incentives. And so we've talked extensively before about how rewards and recognition and incentives all come from kind of this behavioral paradigm, but really it's, again, authority in a humanist paradigm. And so when they discuss turning mid-level managers into purpose-driven leaders, what they actually mean is doing a different kind of training to help them get better, to be better role models, which comes from the humanist movement. So then, Carol, why does this matter anyways? Yeah. We're not doing bad, like in some, you know, in society, in some self-centered way. So what's wrong here?
When we stand in a worldview, I mean, my way of thinking about when we stand in a worldview, we decide what we're going to let inside our view, what fits and is cohesive, and what has to stay outside. If what we do is stay inside, if humans are responsible for doing things, I believe they most of the time, with all the right intentions, are doing fragmented things. They are doing things that start with a part or a piece, like a river in a life shed, or a child's problems or shortfalls or weaknesses. And I'm not saying go for strengths, because that's still a fragment. They set out to really do what they're hoping, like your warehouser story. And what they're doing is getting what in medicine you call false positives, where they're really, what we're really likely to happen if we can't shift to a more systems way and subject, but put ourselves in, not even in service. It's, the words are hard. Put themselves in a position to be listening and understanding they have a role, as the Lumi Elder said, in a greater purpose, or we're going to end up with having nothing that is what we know about how the world exists. We have to learn to see the mountain and the life shed, not the river. We have to see where there's systemic reciprocity. The real thing is we have to be able to envision something alive and working. And I use this crazy example once in a while. If you want to improve anything and your tendency is to take it apart like a fountain pen, and you start to say, well, there's this little ballpoint and there's this tube inside and it's a casing. If you take it apart and try and work on each of those pieces, you're not in an indigenous mind. If you look at someone writing and they're writing at a desk and they're writing a paper or they're creating on a computer, and the kind of desk makes a difference and the comfort they have and who's going to be reading this is in their mind. Now you are actually able to create implements, but you're doing it from a system mind. I recommend everyone pick one thing and notice what happens when you move from thinking of it as a thing to envisioning it at work in a nested set of systems that bring together the purpose or higher meaning, not of the writer, but of what can be served. It takes a lot of work. So have fun with that, folks.
So thank you all for joining us. And we have some quick announcements to make.
We've mentioned to you before, but I know we do get notes about how in the world can we get more, gain more, be connected to this work, be with other people. And we do have a variety of learning communities that where we do this kind of thinking together with people in community. So if today's show or any other really intrigues you, it was sparked by a member in one of those communities. In fact, in this case, it was two. And the second year of work we're doing in one of those streams is now about leadership and the kind of things we were talking about today and the leadership of change when you're in a business, an organization, or an industry. So check out carolsanfordinstitute.com under offerings. You'll find out about one of those communities, and the other one is in seed-communities.com.
Many of you all might be wondering how to get your ideas selected by Business Second Opinion for a show. So it's pretty easy. You can go to Business Second Opinion webpage and email us or find our email there and drop a business practice that you want to question. But you need to be sure that it has an authored article that people can read and reach, right? So like Harvard Business Review has limited but open access as one example, but we're totally open to other publications as well. And remember, you want a second opinion, not a first opinion.
And by the way, I suggest if you really want to get engaged in the kind of ideas we do in your organization, you join us in setting up a book club. I have created a book club for 4 out of 5 of my books, and The Regenerative Life is the big one right now. I've created, with the help of one of my members of the organization, in fact, Zach's wife, helped create these extensive workbooks. I also produce about 6 hours of augmented and additional video from the most frequently asked questions that people get access to for free. In order to join a book club, you need to buy books in bulk, but we'll give you a 50% discount through my publisher, which is where they have to be bought to qualify for that discount. There's more at carolsanford.com, or if you can't find what you need, email me, carol@carolsanford.com.
This has been Business Second Opinion.